God, and here we go. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. There's 16 locations. Think about that. I'd go to, you know what I would do? I would, like, go to all of them. You've seen the back of those RVs where people put up stickers of every state they've been to?
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing in the back of your car. Visit all 16 of them.
We were going to do that over the summer.
Were we going to go to all 16 locations?
Each week we should have profiled a different one, but now we can do it for the fall, or maybe by the time we get around to it, winter.
Mm. We're still working on the jingle, and somebody has sent one in, by the way. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. We're giving you this for free, all right? That's what you get here on the Tom and Curly Show. A little something, something, something on the side. You know what I mean? Hook a brother up. 49 years they've been around. What's wrong?
Hook which brother up?
Hook a brother up. I'll have to say that. Dive it in there. I worked at McDonald's. Ever since I got the job at McDonald's, this is a number of years ago, every guy, hey, come on, man, hook a brother up. More fries. It's like, come on. I don't want to give you more fries. I don't want to get fired. By the way, Rye finally got a job.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, got a job at McDonald's.
He did, huh?
Yep.
So it's Mick this and Mick that.
Yeah, but it's in Sammamish, and they have giant kiosks. So he goes, I don't exactly know what I'm supposed to do. I'm behind the counter because I can't go back because I'm too young to touch the food. So
really?
He's there at the counter. Yeah. All right. Let's see. Amazon drops $1 million into the city council race. This is on top of what they already spent before.
Well, 45. So it's $1.45 million is their total. So about half a million. So they just, it's like they tripled what they did, apparently. And it's the biggest, they say no one can remember any one company pouring this much money into an election in memory.
But if you look at the other donations that are coming in, aren't they mostly, if you add them all up, doesn't it equal to Amazon gives? And most of them are progressive for the candidates on the other side?
No, what they said is that every candidate, so this is, we're talking about a pack.
Yeah.
We're not talking about everybody can contribute to the individual campaigns. But these are now PACs because PACs have unlimited access to money. They can take as much money as they want.
Yeah.
And so what they did, what the Seattle Times did do is that they added up all the campaign money raised by all the other candidates going against them, and it doesn't equal what Amazon in one fell swoop gave to a PAC, and then the PACs make more money. So there's a lot more money on that side of things.
I see. Okay. Who is this guy, director from Case, executive director, responding?
So he's with the PAC that they donated to.
Oh, okay, good.
We think it's great. Amazon's the city's largest employer. They care deeply about the future of this city. And they're investing to make sure voters understand the choice that's in front of them, which is change towards more solutions or sticking with the same dysfunctional ideological rhetoric that we currently get from council.
There you go. His tone of his voice sounds like that of a kid in high school trapped in a locker.
You think someone with Amazon background would sound
closer to the microphone. he says, you know, we get a chance to hear from different voices. Yeah. He explains what they're planning on doing with the money.
We want what voters want, which is a functional city council that gets back to the basics and effectively addresses our significant challenges like traffic, housing affordability, and homelessness. Mm. The candidates that we're supporting would be excellent additions to the city council, that they care deeply about the city and making progress on those issues like transportation, housing affordability, and homelessness. And we want voters to know that they have the experience and the ability to bring Seattle together to help make progress on those issues.
There you go, Mr. McIntyre. Well said. All right. Why are they only supporting one incumbent? Uh-oh.
We think she's done that, but she's struggled with some of her colleagues, and we believe that if there's a better council around her...
Deborah Juarez.
Oh, Deborah
Juarez. She'll continue to be an excellent advocate for D5, but also for the city as a whole.
Okay. Are you shocked by the fact that they put $1 million in? Does this
bother
you at all?
Only in that, because hitherto for...
Yes, there you go.
Amazon had not cared much about local politics. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was the head tax proposal that kind of brought their attention. They also, the Seattle Times article cites the pushback they got when they were trying to set up a second headquarters in New York City, that they've now become much more politically active and involved. They have every right to be. I mean, they are a Seattle. They are the most significant Seattle employer, mm-hmm. Surpassing a Boeing, I think, at this point. And so they have a right to weigh in. The question is, how much money, might be too much money, would it distort the democratic process? But
how's that happen?
What do you mean?
How do you distort the democratic process with money?
Well, one could. So the concern is, and I'm not saying it's happening at this point, but if they decide to pour $10 million into this race rather than one and a half, that would just swamp all the other fundraising efforts by anybody else into it that they would have the loudest voice. Doesn't mean that everyone would vote for it. And, in fact, what Amazon has to do is they have a balancing act here, because they basically there's a Chamber of Commerce slate, and then there's like a union slate, and they're going back and forth, the progressive slate and the I don't know what you call them, the moderate slate or whatever. But the idea here is that at some point it could be a talking point against them if you are, oh, you're the Amazon-picked guy, if Amazon, overplays its hand.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting dilemmas, I don't know, dilemmas maybe the too strong a word, but one of the interesting quirks in this is that Egan Orion is the guy who's running against Shama Sawant. He is the beneficiary of all of this Amazon money because they're backing the Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. But he himself says, you know, this makes me a little nervous about this, that he would like to go back. He would like to somehow come up with an idea to pledge that we don't do this, that he thought the independent PAC spending is completely out of scale with the grassroots campaigns that he and other candidates are trying to raise.
Too bad.
So even he is a little uncomfortable. Even as the beneficiary.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, he has to distance himself from it. But basically, if you think about campaigning advertising, all it is advertising and marketing, right? So I looked up, Amazon spends $10 billion a year on marketing. They're spent $1 million, so that's 0.01%. They have spent on marketing their candidates. Basically, that's what's happening. The fact that people spend money to market something does not necessarily mean that it's going to be successful. I look at Microsoft's phone, which totally sucked, and they spent millions and millions and millions of dollars. People looked at it and said, no, I don't want that phone. I'll take a different phone. So the fact that Amazon comes in with $1 million and they spend it, and then people get a chance to hear the ad and hear the candidates and see the stuff, all it is just marketing, right? You look at Tom Steyer. Tom Steyer bought himself a position on the debate stage yesterday. He is spending millions of dollars every single day of his own money. Joni Ernst out of Iowa was outspent, I think, 4-1, and she won. So the idea is, just because money is spent, if the people don't like the idea, they don't vote for the candidate.
Yes, to some degree. But the problem is that money can distort a little local election.
Explain to me how it distorts an election.
Because right now, how many people do you know really dig down deep into these kinds of races? They don't. A lot of us, I have to acknowledge that a lot of us just say, oh, yeah, I've seen her signs or I've seen his signs.
Good.
And you vote with familiarity.
That's
with money.
Whose fault is that? Because Tom, you say, I saw a lot of signs.
Okay, John.
I saw a lot of signs, so they're going to vote for this person.
No, you saw a lot of advertising signs. They may have no support in the community, but you have a lot of advertising from and this is part of the concern of the outside sources sort of infecting local races. It could. If you're just running for the local dog catcher, and the idea is you're going to spend $10 and your opponent's going to spend $10, and then somebody comes in and says, hey, I'm going to put $1 million into one again, that person's probably going to have a huge advantage, because normally we don't see that kind of money at the national level and or like senatorial level. Mm-hmm. They already have kind of national issues, and so we are much more attuned to what we're voting for at the national level than we are at the local level.
I see. So let's go back. Let's go back to your dog catcher thing. So what you're saying is, we're going to protect the voter from its own ignorance by limiting the amount of money that can come in for the dog catcher. Because what you're assuming is Mr. Smith drives down the street, sees about 1 million signs and a giant billboard and all this other stuff for this other dog catcher. And then you assume Mr. Smith is easily swayed by the plastic signs and he votes for this guy. Well, whose fault is that? Octavia Emptor, in this case, buyer beware, because the guy didn't do the proper work that can be done. Now, if you had the government come in and block that the guy can't have information out and the other guy can't have information out, you see all the signs, you go home, you Google, you go on the guy's website, and you're like, that dog catcher's horrible. He's a terrible human being. Look at this. He was convicted in 6 states for dog cruelty. I'm not going to go for that guy, no matter how big the sign is.
But if you couldn't get the word out.
What word out? What word out?
The word out that he is a convicted dog criminal.
Go online. Google. I spent half my life Googling things.
I know, but most people don't, because most people don't care enough about
politics.
So
what are we trying to do? We're trying to protect ourselves from most people's ignorance or apathy?
Yeah, oh, come on. Most voters would acknowledge we have to vote for judges. How much do we know about judges?
Look at me. I got elected. Is that what you wanted to say? Is that what you wanted to say? Well, there you go. I said it.
Democracy,
and I got low blood sugar.
Democracy sucks, but it's the best system we have.
Keep going, Amazon. Spend that money. Let's see. There's a... How many Senate...
it's just one guy introducing legislation. This may go nowhere.
This is dumb. This is Richard Blumenthal, who lied about serving in Vietnam, talks about a bill to protect members of the news media.
I offered this bill last session before any of these videos surfaced.
Yeah, did you?
It is a priority for me to protect news gathering operations, no matter what their form. And the act that we're proposing would, in fact, establish a federal crime when someone threatens or attacks anyone doing fact gathering or news operations.
Okay. That is the purpose
of this bill. It would be punishable if it's bodily injury by up to three years, serious bodily injury. By up to 6 years.
Okay.
And a fine.
Okay, thank you, Richard. He's responding to the fact that somebody puts together some stupid video where you see Trump is playing the part. They put Trump's face over
a Kingsman massacre scene in a church, and who he's massacring in this video are a bunch of news organizations.
But John McCain makes it in.
Yeah, and John McCain, yeah. Some of his
and Nancy Pelosi's face makes it in. So they superimpose Nancy Pelosi's face on there, and it's the scene from Hollywood, and now you've got Trump's face in there, and he's spinning around and hitting people in the eye and stabbing him in the neck.
So I don't know. I'm not quite sure what makes it a federal crime as opposed to – I mean, the idea is there is concern that if you are intimidating journalists from doing their job, that that could be a concern. But I don't know why it needs to come in at the level of a federal crime. If a crime is committed – bodily injury is already, I assume, if you attack somebody, it's assault. So
maybe they can do different sentencing or something.
Yeah, it could
be. Explains the court. Do you count? Why do you want? Do you care about explaining who counts news?
I don't
news
really
media?
Think this is going to go
not
that far anywhere. Because even news media and journalists saying, I'm not sure that's, you know, it's. I think it's a bad scene when journalists are discouraged. Let's just say the most polite way from actually doing their jobs.
Right.
But until they're threatened, until they're, stopped from doing it.
Yeah. Like Andy Negro, the guy in Portland that got beaten up by Antifa, that guy.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They still haven't found the people. It's interesting. They have video of him being attacked, but they haven't been able to find the guys that did it.
So you think it's a government conspiracy not to
not
find
not government conspiracy. It's just it's Portland police. It's not Portland police.
Yeah,
it's
they're in the
Portland
pockets
mayor.
Of the liberals, I'm sure.
Right. British family decries treatment at the U.S. border. This is one bizarre story. Now, they have had some other problems before. Here's Cairo 7 explaining. This is Graham Johnson explaining the report of the British family detained by the Border Patrol for accidentally crossing the border.
Eileen and David Connors are in a Pennsylvania detention center with their three-month-old son and four other members of their extended family, including two-year-old twins. The British family has been detained since crossing the U.S.-Canada border into Linden around 9 p.m. October 3rd.
It was a very silly set of circumstances that went to an extreme and it didn't need to get there.
In a sworn statement, Eileen Connors wrote, "While on vacation in Vancouver, we made a very brief detour on an unmarked road to avoid an animal on the road. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials say the vehicle entered the U.S. illegally by slowly and deliberately driving through a ditch."
The family describes being in the United States for a matter of about 5 seconds, at which point they are encountered by Border Protection.
The family's attorney, Bridget Cambria, says they accidentally crossed the border looking for their hotel.
Wait a minute. So driving down the road, and they go to avoid a large animal of some sort, I'm assuming.
Yes.
So they drive in a ditch to get, that when you go in the ditch, you're crossing over into the other border.
Apparently, yes.
But they were doing that looking for their hotel?
Well, I assume based on their, let's take everything that they're saying at face value and that it's true.
Okay.
That 5 seconds into it to get around the animal or avoid the animal and then get back on the road.
It's like one of those video games you play as a kid. So you have to avoid the animal while looking for your
hotel
and then not get arrested.
Driving through a ditch.
The family describes being in the United States for a matter of about 5 seconds.
They loved it.
At which point they are encountered by Border Protection.
The family's attorney, Bridget Cambria, says they accidentally crossed the border looking for their hotel.
So we all make wrong turns on roads. If we're stopped by an authority figure, we would hope that authority figure would send us on our way to safety. Instead, these authority figures took two families into custody And their custody has lasted 13 days.
Eileen Connors wrote that after being put in detention, her husband was sent to this facility in Tacoma, and she and her baby were taken to the Red Roof Inn in SeaTac before they all were flown to this family facility in Pennsylvania. Connors wrote, "We will be traumatized for the rest of our lives by what the United States government has done to us."
Oh, good.
Officials with Customs and Border Protection say during processing, records checks revealed two of the adults were previously denied travel authorization to come to the United States.
Ah! Yes, and they don't explain why, although there is this added piece of information in the copy that says that if you admit to smoking dope, you're not allowed in this country, even though it's legal, especially in the state of Washington. So it might have been only that.
Oh.
But
they were denied.
Yeah, but they were denied. What's weird to me is that in the story, so I can imagine a story in which this is an outrage. They're just, we're treating this family too harshly. However, another quirk in the story is when Canada refused to take them back, when they said, hey, these people claim that they were just vacationing and they came over here.
Yeah. And avoid an animal and to look for a hotel.
They couldn't get a hold of a British consul, even though they called them twice, according to the authorities. But then Canada said, well, no, we don't want them back. And so now they're sort of stuck on our property. It makes you wonder who exactly they are and what their background is.
Why didn't Canada want them back?
Exactly. That's the one question we don't have that makes me suspicious.
Or Pennsylvania.
But doesn't that seem weird? They separate the mom. He's got an infant and two-year-old twins.
He's got that at the Red Roof Inn there in SeaTac and then
does,
off to Pennsylvania.
But they take the dad goes over here and the mom
they
with
gotta
all
separate
these kids.
Them. No, they yeah, you do. She's probably held in a detention center with other women that were trying to avoid a moose on the road and find their hotel.
It's a head scratcher.
Something else is going on.
Hopefully,
there'll
be a second. Follow up on that story.
Yeah, like we ever follow up on stories.
Sometimes we follow them to the death. We go like 17 updates on a story that no one cared
news
about
organization, and we'll be keeping close tabs on that story. Thank you, Monica. It's like you're not going to keep close tabs on it.
Jacob, I assign this close assignment to you.
Right, fine. Okay, we come back. Somebody's going to get on board a plane, and it's going to take 20 hours. You're going to be on the plane for 20 hours. And scientists want to know, what's that going to do to you? Plus, imagine this. You're in the crappy seats way in the back, but if you look at the services that you're receiving, they're almost identical to what you get up there in first class. Something's wrong. We'll be right back. Muckleshoot Casino's easy to find. Let's look for where everybody's having fun. Rachel Bell, not so easy to find. Somewhere in New Zealand. You've ever been to New Zealand, Tom?
No. I watched all the Hobbit movies.
That doesn't count. I went all over that great country. Auckland and Rotorua.
Thanks to Evening Magazine,
Of course.
I assume.
I got tossed off of the Sky Tower. Is that what it's called, the Sky Tower? Yeah.
The world's largest bungee jump or something?
No, I did that. No, this was the thing. It looks like the Space Needle, but it's like 50 feet high or something. And they're not supposed to throw you off, but I didn't want to go.
What do you mean you didn't want to go?
I didn't tell you that story real fast.
New Zealand? Yeah.
No, I wanted to be in New Zealand, but I'm standing on the edge of the platform, and the guy goes, don't look down. Don't look down. Look at me. Yeah. Look at me. Here we go. Here comes Jumper. 3, 2, 1. Here comes John. Jump! And this is like a couple weeks after September 11th. Remember people jumping out of?
Oh my God!
So
yeah.
Falling John. So I was like, I can't. I can't. He goes, No. You don't want to be the first one to ever chicken out. I said, no one else has come back in off this plank. Well, two other people, but don't be the third. Come on, here we go. Right, 3, 2, 1. I said, no, I can't. And I stood out there for like 15 minutes on the end of this plank. He looked straight down, like 700 feet down.
In a harness? A harness. Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm just on my own.
No, I mean, I didn't know.
I got a down jacket. I wanted to break the fall. Yeah, I got a harness on.
No, I didn't know if it was a bungee jump around your
harness
ankle.
It's the same descending friction harness that's used in Batman movies. Most to make me feel better.
Yeah.
So then the guy says, I said, I can't do it. He goes, okay, I'm going to help you. Put your hands behind your back. Don't touch me. So I said, okay, fine. So I put my hands behind my back. And he said, he leans out. He's also hooked to a harness. Yeah. He grabs the harness by the front. With his left hand, he signals the guy that's controlling the contraption that lifts you up and lowers you. So as he pulls me in, they lift me up. So now I'm off the ground. And then he pushes me and says, goodbye.
Did you feel betrayed?
Oh, my God, I was mad.
Yeah, you're like the poor girl that got pushed off
the
bridge.
I land on the ground. I come down the ground. The guy, see, that wasn't so bad. I said, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I was so mad at them. And then they made us cut it out because I said, the New Zealand was like, don't show that. Yikes.
Good for, well, are you scared of heights? I mean,
I did the other, it was the September 11th thing was still in my head.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So,
plus the one guy had been smoking a lot of dope and I'm like, I trust this guy?
No, okay.
No.
I'd have been with you, John.
Thank you, Tom. human guinea pigs, that's what they're being described as they get on board an airplane and they fly 20 hours and they're paying for this, by the way.
Yeah.
They're flying from where to, it's going to Australia, right?
Yeah, it's Australia to New York, and then there's also one from London. You know, remember, Qantas, they're based in Australia. It's hard to fly anywhere from Australia. That doesn't take a long time.
You normally bump down into Hawaii, and then from Hawaii to like.
So they're hoping to get direct flights from London and New York down to Australia, and it takes like about 20 hours.
Yeah, it does.
And so they're doing this big experiment because Qantas doesn't know if they need to pull the plug or not on this idea. Is this just too much? You go over that many time zones. Is it worth the experience or not? Will people pay for it to have this direct flight or should they give it up? And so they're doing this test. There are 50 people on this plane.
Yeah.
The passengers are all guinea pigs. They're literally going to be tested, including the pilots. They're going to be testing what their body, their temperature, their cardiovascular rates, everything to see how hard this is on the human body, whether this is something they would want to market or not. And they talk about the complications. Each of the billions of cells in the human body has its own clock, and that means that when you're out of sorts because of a jet lag, your heart function is off, your food absorption is off, your metabolism is all screwed up, so all of your organs are out of step. Mm. And when you're out of step for 20 straight hours and you're still flying, is this doable? The other question is, you'd have to get special clearance for the crew to, you know, right now that you can't fly, the pilots can't fly for more than some. How many crew members do you need? Can they be, you know,
rotated? Right. And what type of sleep is the one shift getting while the other shift is working?
They say that it's not just crossing the time zones that screws you up, but general fatigue, poor quality sleep. The dry pressurized air that the cabin is like, it really is, it's a strain. And so they're trying to see how comfortable. And I think that the only flights that could afford to be 20-hour flights would have to be first class. Because I think a cabin experience of 20 hours, crap, would be impossible to survive. But anyway, they're doing these big experiments to see if this is something that we want or not.
A new business has started that people in first class pay an additional $8 to get a tour of what it's like in coach.
It's like those poverty tours in India.
All right, everybody, if you just follow me, we're going to be heading back.
Right. Try not to make eye contact. Just observe out of the corner of your eyes.
You can take pictures with the people, but you have to ask first.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Terrible. All right. Imagine flying coach and not hating it. Delta has decided. For people that know, the crappy seats are the ones way, way in the back. You're next to the toilet, which is a great place to, if you have diarrhea or if you want to meet someone who has diarrhea, that's a good seat. So they got you in the back, and they're like, listen, we know it sucks back here, so we're going to make it a little better for you.
Yeah, this is actually a nice idea. Delta's decided that, so you've got United, American, and Delta as all these relatively inexpensive airlines, and they said, we got to kind of establish we're a cut above United and American, and so they're making more amenities. They're giving individuals on the plane in coach, it's all in coach, a little more leg room. Mm-hmm. But the most astonishing thing is, what you mentioned, for people that are stuck way in the back, and again, all these adjustments that are being made are not for domestic flights. They're for international flights, ones that last six and a half hours or more. Mm-hmm. But you get upgrade. In general, they're going to upgrade the coach meal service on these flights. But passengers in the back of the plane, and God, I've been in the back of the plane so many times, we're going to get free welcome cocktails, hot towels, printed menus, placemats, a choice of appetizers, and separate dessert service. And the portions are going to be bigger, too. I think that there may be a scramble to go sit in the back of the plane, because that sounds like what I understand based on your experience.
Yes,
what first class is like.
Are they giving you hot towels?
It does say hot towels, yes.
Oh, those are nice.
I mean, I think that's great. I think it's a great idea. They've decided that right now it's gone so far the other way that everybody, and I love to travel, but even for me, when I think about traveling, it's like, oh, I got like 12 hours of misery ahead of me.
Do you think that the vacation begins the moment you get off that plane, right?
No. I
You think vacation begins the minute you walk out of here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Another realize it's way too short. No, I think of the plane as that's part of the vacation. Yeah.
Okay.
But boy, it's a tough part of vacation. Anyway, they're trying to adjust themselves. They realized earlier on that reliability could be a competitive edge. So they're now the most reliable of these.
Can you imagine being? So let's say they start the upgrade at like row 26.
Yeah,
you're in row 25. You're like, I think I'd like a hot towel. Have a hot towel for
maybe
me.
Maybe a dessert, a special dessert. I know.
Excuse me, I got one of these little biscotti cookies. I noticed they got some sort of like,
you know, John,
cheesecake thing. Maybe right behind me.
Maybe they'll put up those, you know, the drapes for the back too. You have to go through the drapes to get access to that, kind of to balance the.
It is so smart
out.
Because everybody complains back there.
Yeah,
but then one group's like, hey, "It's not so bad. We got this, this, and this." You have to have little levels in there. That's good. I like that.
It is so funny because when I go to like concerts or like go to the opera, I realize, wow, the guy on the other aisle, he's paying $150 more bucks than I am. I got a good deal. It's like people really buy their tickets, you know, based on cheap things moving up. Go, wow, what's the difference? That would be like on the airplane.
Remember that? We used to have smoking and non-smoking sections. What a joke.
I know. In restaurants, too. They
I think I'm in the non-smoking section.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right behind the smoking section.
Oh, my God. Oh, did you want non-smoking? I'm sorry. Sit here. Be right back. On this? Come on, everybody. Where's the free market? Rush in here. Take advantage of all the listeners. It's after all those.
The market is busy elsewhere, apparently.
You know, I'm spending money on the Dory Show. Is that the name of that show?
I don't know.
All right. Let's see. We're heading out through the 10. Oh, by the way, you can write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well at 98973. Do love to hear from you. Get somebody gets Zanspeed letter of the day. It is a big deal in people's lives. Often people that write to us say, hey, I told my wife I was letter of the day, and she just looked at me blankly. So you can maybe feel as if it'll change your life. Write to us, and teeny tiny lady in a pickle jar chooses who is the letter of the day. Of the three, which one you want to do, Tom?
The first one.
Hey, look. Nora and her pasta are on YouTube. This is, I don't understand that so many people tune in to watch people making pasta.
That's right.
Travel around the country and they find old people, normally old
Italians.
Italians.
But the nice thing is they go to Italy. The only reason I think this is of any interest, do we have a story?
I got promotional video of pasta grannies.
Okay. Homemade, handmade, traditional pasta.
Pasta.
Action. Action.
Meet the experts with me, Vicky. Real-life grandmothers and home cooks I call pasta grannies. With a new video every week, I travel across Italy collecting pasta-making techniques and traditions passed down the generations. From the rarest pasta in the world, ravioli.
Okay, we got it.
Okay, that's probably enough. So the reason this is getting
enough 10 minutes ago
attention is 418,000 subscribers to this Pasta Granny's YouTube channel. That people are watching this. And why is this woman doing it? She realizes that because of the modern conveniences of the kitchen, nobody is making pasta, and there are all these grannies in Italy. I mean, she goes to Italy, and each show is about a different older woman, you know, who's showing you literally how to make pasta from scratch. And it's just what we're doing, and they zero in on the fingers. They're zeroing in on the practice that is probably going to be out of touch. Like those granny's grandkids probably are never going to make this because it's not convenient. It's not efficient. And so she's trying to preserve, and that's the part I like about it. She's trying to preserve a part of culture that's going to go away. Other than that, I don't give a rip about, making
pasta.
But
she gets a chance to hear the stories from the people that are there making the pasta.
Yeah, although they don't talk much. It's mostly just about the technique they use. And,
I'll have to do that.
So anyway.
Because I make my own pasta.
That's right. I think you could be the first pasta granny who's under 60.
Trying to do stuff with the kids. I'm like, I need to... Yeah. I want to have them cook. I don't care about food.
Yeah, no.
But I thought, well, this would be something for us to do. So we was trying to make pizza dough.
Yeah.
And then that didn't work out. So then I went to Sur La Table and I bought this really nice pasta maker.
Oh, that'll fix things.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Is it?
It takes me forever to make the pasta because I always screw up on the ingredients and stuff. But then I like it, and there's nothing better for it. Man, it is the best. You ever had homemade pasta?
Yes, like, I have. Yes.
You can't. You're like, why would I ever eat that stuff out of the box after I just put a couple of eggs and some flour? That's all you need. Yeah. A little bit of
water.
No water.
No water.
There's no water in there. You got some sort of oil, and then you're all set.
You know, it's funny because the reason I can say this is that I took a cooking class where we made the meal that we were going to sit down at. I won it in a Seattle Weekly contest, and I realized it was amazing. I'd never had pasta that fresh, and it just tasted so tremendous. But it took us 6 hours, and I realized I'm going
to
really...
No, 6 hours to make the pasta?
No, not the pasta, no, but we did an entire dinner. It was fantastic. Okay. And it was all these different... I mean, I loved the experience of eating it, and I liked knowing about it, but what it gave me appreciation for is how much work goes into making this stuff. I go, now I'm going to appreciate it. When I have to pay $20 for a meal or $25 or $30 for a restaurant meal, it's like, wow, that's definitely worth it to save me 6 hours.
I tried to time it the other day because... Kids going to come over. We're all going to have dinner. They're coming home. They're all coming home.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, 4 o'clock I'll start. I'll have all the stuff. It'll be drying on the pasta drying rack. Within 15 minutes, the pasta will be ready. And then they'll come in. I'll put it in the boiling water, and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
So I put too many eggs in, so I had to keep working. I'm like, why is it so sticky? So now I'm online with my sticky hands typing in, why is my pasta all sticky?
Too many eggs?
You know what time I started at 4. 10 of 6. I finally started putting it through the super
sweat
duper.
Sweat dripping off your brow.
Out onto the pasta. It's kind of salty,
man. Go out to Spaghetti Factory.
Why is my pasta sticky?